Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got two on the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Rogan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. With you for the next 60 minutes, 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can also chime in via social media on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets a little bit later on in the program. We'll have Jenna Lane join us in a little bit, who covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. She was also at Florida Gators Pro Day yesterday, so she'll be joining us to give us an overview of what to expect from the Gators prospects that showcase their talents for NFL scouts and so forth. The NFL also approved a few rule changes earlier today, and Roger Goodell addressed the media, as did Ben McAdoo, because NFC coaches spoke with the media down at the owners' meeting. So we'll touch on all of that and more as we take you up till the top of the hour. And Anita, I think a good place to start is with some of the rule changes. I know John and Paul covered some of those aspects yesterday, but now we actually have some rule changes that are going to be implemented, and the majority of them are going to be on a one-year experiment, which means that they have the opportunity after a year to decide that they don't want to fully keep the rule alive. And the most notable rule is the fact that now kickoffs are going to automatically, touchbacks, are going to be at the 25-yard line instead of the 20-yard line. So you wonder how many teams are now going to have the ability or the desire to return the football, considering you're going to get pretty good field position at the 25 now.
Yeah, so and beyond that, now you kind of question the need for, a special teams return guy. You know, it kind of diminishes that exact role on a football team. I mean, you know, if you're getting the ball on the 25-yard line every time you get a touchback, I mean, that is. You're adding five more yards. It's solid field position to start off a drive. And to me, I think the biggest thing is now, you know, it kind of diminishes the role and the value of going out and really spending big-time money on a special return guy.
No, that's why you have to wonder the teams that already went out and invested in somebody like that, what type of a role now does that player take on? I think teams are still going to want to return it if they have that dynamic player.
Absolutely.
But if you don't, you may just say, you know what, I'd rather just take the good field position at the 25.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I can see that trend happening.
So that's going to be interesting. And I do like the part that it's a one-year thing. You know what I mean? Like, let's not totally commit to it. It's kind of like a relationship, right? Like, you don't meet somebody and get married the next day. It's kind of like, all right, let me date this rule for a year, and let's see if we really like it, and then we'll decide whether or not, you know, put a ring on it. You know what I mean?
Well, that's
so we'll see.
It's been a trend with most of these rule changes.
Did you get Beyonce?
Yeah. Okay. Yes, I did get the thing.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I wasn't going to laugh on the floor here, but I understood the reference here.
Just wanted to make sure. Not sure if that was your genre.
It did not go over my head.
Okay.
I did get the reference. But I was going to say that this one-year experimentation phase before they want to go to marriage has been adopted before, because the extra point, if you remember, it was a one-year experiment this past season, mm-hmm. and they just fully adopted it moving forward.
And I like that they did. My goodness. You know, it's really, it dictated so much. I mean, heck, it, in my opinion, it really dictated in regard to the Patriots advancing to the Super Bowl or not. I mean, so it's you know, that rule change, I think, has made this game even that much more competitive, and vice versa, is that now it's made your field goal kicker that much more important and that much more valued. Where now I think we're going to see a lot more teams like the Ravens tagging, you know, their field goal kicker, or, you know, possibly drafting field goal kickers out of college. So, it's interesting. Rule changes, you know, whether it's going to put more value on a position and a player or less.
The other thing to note is IR is changing. Usually you had one player designated for return, and you usually had to do that right before the season started when the 53-man roster was finalized. Now they're saying you could take 6 weeks to determine who you want to have as the designated player to return. And that's interesting, even from the Giants' perspective, because if you remember, you know, the Giants had a few players on IR immediately at the beginning of the season. Now if you can wait 6 weeks to designate that one player, there's a chance somebody who was set to miss the first 5 weeks of the season or even the first half of the season now has a better chance to return. You know, for example, a player like Nat Burhe or somebody that maybe could have returned in week 8 or week 9 this past season, you now would have had the opportunity to designate that player for return a little bit later on. So I actually like their additional flexibility plan here where teams don't have to immediately decide in September who they want to put on IR with respect to that designation to return. And then the other thing is related to the Odell Beckham, Vontaze Burfict, which we spoke about the other day, that obviously the two fouls could lead to an automatic ejection. But it's not every personal foul. I think that's important to note. It's the fact that if it's unsportsmanlike conduct, that sets you up to get automatically ejected.
I'm just curious. Like, so are the Zebras going to walk around with a yellow card and just be like...
Well, they do it for soccer.
I know. So, I know. I mean, that's going to be interesting. You know, I mean, that's... And that does make, if anybody does watch soccer, I mean, it does make it kind of fun when, you know, the ref walks over and, like, presents a yellow flag and then the player's all upset.
Well, I'm sure there'll be some type
of indication. A yellow card.
Or the red card, depending on what the offense is.
I think they should adopt the same thing. I think that'd be funny.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how they indicate the wrongdoing.
Right.
So I'm sure the PA announcer will say something to that nature, or the official will have to alert the head coach or so forth. I'm sure they'll put a plan in place. But it's important to know, once again, it's only for unsportsmanlike conduct. I think a lot of people, when they read the initial rule change, they're thinking, oh, it's going to affect players like Odell Beckham and Vontaze Burfict, and that's the truth. It's not, because a personal foul is different than unsportsmanlike conduct. So that's what I think people need to understand. Unsportsmanlike conduct, two strikes, you're out, not necessarily specific personal fouls. So that will be important for at least people to understand the distinct difference as opposed to what unsportsmanlike conduct will lead to.
But at the same time, you could say that the way that both those players were behaving was unsportsmanlike conduct.
Well, you could certainly categorize it at that, but
yeah,
if that's not the official call, it's still not going to come back to bite them.
Right,
they have to be designated for an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty.
I know, but based on this rule, I think if you were to go back – I think that if this rule was in place, I think they would have gotten the unsportsmanlike conduct. Although, very interesting, in speaking to a number of refs, specifically with the Odell, Josh Norman situation, a lot of the refs said that they would not have wanted it upon themselves to take either of those players out of the game because of how significant their role is to their teams. That was too much of a decision to make. That it was really up to the coaches to remove those players from the field. So that was a tough situation for a lot of the refs that game.
We remind you that Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. So as I mentioned off the top of the show, we're going to focus on the Florida Gators today. And to provide some more insight on that front, we welcome in Jenna Lane, who covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers down in Tampa, but also was at Florida Gators Pro Day.
This is what they do at the Swamp.
Yes, indeed. That is the insignia for the team. Jenna, appreciate the time. How's everything?
Oh, things are doing great. Just recovering from two consecutive days of pro days and going through my notes and everything, going through the videos that I took yesterday and, you know, just trying to, you know, do as many phone calls as I can just to get everyone's reactions from what they saw yesterday. There was a huge turnout at Florida's pro day yesterday.
Well, obviously, you know, Hargraves is the one guy that everybody is goo goo gaga over. The reason we wanted to have you on, Jenna, was not only because, of course, you attended the pro day, but also I know that he's from Tampa. You're in Tampa. I'm curious, you know, did you know about him when he was in high school? And also, do you really think that he would be available at 10 when the Giants draft?
Well, yeah, and of course the domino effect with the draft is because of the fact that, you know, the Bucs are selecting at 9 and he's got the Giants right after that, you know, it's kind of puzzling, you know, I shouldn't say puzzling, but, you know, you just kind of wonder where the chips are going to fall. And, of course, the Giants have that need there now that Prince Mukamara is not part of the team anymore. But I knew about Vernon Hargraves from the time he was in high school on. And, you know, of course, you can credit a lot of that to the fact that, you know, we are putting these high school kids now on ESPN. There's a local TV station here that focuses pretty much exclusively on high school sports, Bright House Sports Network. And so he was kind of one of their stars. And then, of course, you know, his dad being a football coach himself. So you heard a lot about him coming out of high school. I remember when he committed to the University of Florida. Remember when he made his decision to declare for the draft and everything. So He's been a household name here for quite some time. The locals here really like him a lot. And, of course, the Bucks have a lot of needs right now as far as pass rush, but also in their secondary. He's a guy that a lot of fans right now are clamoring for at that spot. And he did nothing to hurt himself yesterday, that's for sure.
Can only imagine in terms of Mike Smith now, the new defensive coordinator in Tampa Bay. Well, speaking of his performance, Jenny, you just mentioned he didn't hurt himself, but I know there was some mixed reaction in terms of his numbers at the combine. What jumped out to you about his performance yesterday? And when you were to evaluate him as a corner, you know, what are his main strengths?
Well, and he sat on his numbers testing-wise from the combine. He only did drills yesterday, so, you know, he kept his 39-inch vertical. He ran a 4.5 at the combine. He went ahead and stood on that, which I think is smart, the fact that he didn't run yesterday, because they were on that field turf. Even though it was a gorgeous day outside, they wanted to have this thing indoors. In previous years, I remember a couple years ago, they had guys that were running barefoot because they didn't have this indoor facility, so they really wanted people to come into this indoor facility. But unfortunately, that turf, because it's new, it had a lot of give to it. And so you saw guys maybe a split second slower or two than what they maybe would have normally tested at if it was a natural surface. So that's something to keep in mind. Although when you saw him doing his drills, which that's the only thing he did, it didn't seem to slow him at all. It didn't seem to impact his ability to change direction. You know, the guy's very quick twitch, didn't see anything anything contrary to that. So, you know, we changed directions really well. He's obviously very, very fluid. He's got good hips, the way he transitions out of his back pedal. You know, you've also have the vertical leaping ability, which you could see a little bit of that on display. So he looked very sharp out there, and I know a lot of the folks, a lot of the scouts obviously paying very close attention to it, and I thought it was also very telling the fact that the Bucks defensive backs coach was actually leading those drills there. So that just kind of shows you. And the Bucks had four representatives there as well. As far as the Giants, I know Joe Collins from the Giants was there, an executive scout, and he knows a thing or two about defensive back play as well, since he did play safety at South Dakota.
Great job. Jenna Lane joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. For everybody kind of watching and of course, listening, just to kind of give you a comparison, a lot of scouts, a lot of analysts, from what I understand, Jenna, are comparing him, let's say, to a Joe Hayden. So I'm gonna throw that out your way. Do you agree with that? If not, is there another corner? Is there another DB in the league that you would say that really his sky, his potential is this player that we do have a sample size in regard to what he's been able to do in the NFL?
I could see the comparison to Joe Hayden, and I've definitely heard that before. And he's another guy that's 5'11", and so he deals with the size concerns. The only knock that I keep hearing about Hargraves is the size and also his build and the fact that, you know, because he's a little bit thicker. I mean, if you look at this guy, his quads just scream at you when you look at him. He's thicker at the bottom half, but I don't think that hurts him in the regard that, you know, he's such an explosive player. I mean, this is a guy that posted a 39-inch vertical. He's not even 6 foot. And, you know, that just goes to kind of show you, hey, you know what, you want a guy that can go up there for some of these contested catches and go up against some of these bigger receivers. You kind of need that. But, you know, I could definitely see the Hayden comparison. I definitely think that holds true. I'm not sure about anybody else maybe that I would go with, but I could definitely see that.
Talking with Jenna Lane, who covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for Sports Talk 1040 down in Tampa, also was at Florida Gators Pro Day, so we're getting an overview of all the Gators prospects. And speaking of the Florida secondary, Jenna, while Hargraves gets all the attention, one other player to me that I think has really jumped off the page and made a name for himself is at the safety position, Keanu Neal, who, you know, really speaks volumes about maturity in terms of how he conducts himself off the field. But his play on the field, to me, has been getting a lot of chatter in terms of what he can bring to an NFL team. What jumps out to you about him?
I'm so glad you mentioned Keanu Neal, because I talked to him at the combine and I talked to him yesterday, both on camera and off. And he's been the guy during this whole pre-draft process that's really just impressed me the most in terms of who he is as a person. I mean, he just really mature for, I mean, he just, I'm talking to him and I just don't feel like I'm talking to, you know, a high school or a college kid. A just really mature. There's a sincerity about him too. I mean, I was asking him, when was the moment, when did this moment hit you that, hey, you know what, your dreams are about to come true? And he's like, man, I'm at the combine and I couldn't believe that 26 teams wanted to talk to me. I mean, me. And you hear that and you're just saying to yourself, wow, you know, I mean, this guy, I don't know if he realizes how good he is. He's confident, no doubt. But, you know, just you can really appreciate someone that just, you know, has a genuine you know, just very genuine. It just doesn't seem like he's a cocky or an arrogant kid at all. I shouldn't say kid. He's an adult. But, you know, there's just not an arrogance to him, a cockiness to him. He's confident, again, because you need to be able to be confident to play that position. But, you know, and then he was saying, I couldn't believe that John Elway wanted to talk to me. I mean, it's really been fun to kind of view this through his eyes, and he's definitely a great interview, I can tell you that much. But, it, you know, as far as on-the-field play goes and how he touched yesterday, you know, he did redo some things. I know that, I mean, I did talk to some scouts. I know from the Buccaneers, they said that, you know, that's a guy that they really like. So, and I know that right now there's also talk of him possibly sneaking into that first round. And I think that that's a legitimate statement. I think he could very well sneak into the first round for whatever team he goes to. But I will say, though, that I think any team that sits down and talks to him, which, again, 2016 at the Combine alone, I think that they've got to really come away being just really impressed with who he is. He's a heck of a teammate, too. I know he's a guy that his teammates really do like him, and you can just tell, you know, he's not a selfish player either, and that's also important, too. You do tend to get that at times, especially with some of these really talented guys.
Jenna, really quick, again, I know we have you on to talk about Hargraves, but nonetheless, you have a giant on your Tampa Bay roster now, and that's Robert Ayers. You're really, really going to like this young man. Great motor, as you know, the statement you hear a lot of, but a really big heart, a good player, and I think you're really going to enjoy covering him. Has there been a lot of buzz about the Bucs signing him?
Well, definitely, because the Bucs just have not had that dominant edge rusher. So now they're curious, is this a guy that can do that job? I mean, they had such high hopes for Michael Johnson. And to Michael Johnson, you know, it was a disappointment him coming here. He had a high ankle sprain that I really think impacted him throughout the season. I don't think he was ultimately a good fit. And, of course, you saw him come back and have success with the Bengals. They spent a lot of money on him for that not to work out. And so, you know, in signing Ayers, they're really hopeful that he can be that dominant edge rusher. The Bucs just have not, for the last several years, been able to get any sort of pressure on a quarterback. And right now, they really only have some rotational guys. You know, although I would say Jaquie Smith, I think, is a starter, but I think he's better suited for the right side. So, you know, or excuse me, the left side. They're hoping that Robert Ayers can ultimately come in there and be that dominant edge rusher, take on these left tackles, and really just, you know, again, get these quarterbacks on the ground. These Bucs are just not getting these sack numbers. So I know the fans here are definitely hopeful. And I've also heard from, I did talk to a Giants player who had played with Ayers, and he had said, you know, this guy, you know, he comes to work every day. He works hard. He's not a guy that's going to slack off. Hopefully you guys heard the same thing that I did, you know, that he's just going to be a really good teammate too.
Absolutely. And like you mentioned, Tampa Bay certainly could use some edge rushers. And Ayers' numbers really jumped off the page last season in conjunction with JPP coming back. Speaking of the defensive line, Jenna, the Florida Gators have also a few defensive linemen out of this group of prospects. And, you know, I feel as if some of these guys fit in more to the tweener role than perhaps a legitimate defensive tackle or a defensive end. And I'm curious, from what you saw out of Jonathan Bullard and Alex McAllister, sometimes I guess when people see their framework and their numbers, their height and so forth, you wonder whether or not they'll actually be able to make the transition to a defensive tackle or a defensive end in the NFL. Is that a fair synopsis of those two, or do they actually fit a specific prototype?
You know, it's interesting because a few years ago, the tweener thing was like a death sentence for some of these guys. But I think especially the way the college game has gone, you know, it's gotten more spread out. You're seeing a lot more athletic guys. The fact that some guys, even some, they go to some teams and they're not necessarily being asked, you know, they're not being required to, I guess, weigh in, or they don't have a certain weight that they have to maintain, because it does compromise quickness oftentimes. But, you know, I don't think the tweener thing is necessarily a death sentence anymore. And also, too, now that you have teams that, you know, they want these defensive ends, they're, you know, when they mix up their fronts, they go hybrid. If you can dip back into coverage, I mean, that's a strength. Well, you can't necessarily do that if you're a big, huge guy. But as far as Jonathan Bullard goes, he was a guy that really jumped out at me yesterday. I mean, 6'3", 285, but just watching him in drills, he's really, really, really explosive. And you know, I did see also, and I know, of course, I'm talking about the Bucs here, but, you know, the Bucs assistant D-line coach was out there, and Paul Spicer, and I could see them talking afterwards, and it seemed to me that he was pretty impressive to Spicer. I'd have to say he's probably impressive to everyone else. But, yeah, you know, he really – and, of course, five-star recruit as well, so he's someone that lived up to his potential. But they like him, and I think that, you know, he did a good job for himself yesterday. I didn't get as good of a look at McAllister, per se, so that's one that I'm definitely going to have to watch a little bit more closely.
All right, at least last question for me. This is all fantasy, Jenna, because you know I'm a big fantasy person. But Austin Seferian Jenkins, if healthy, could he be a potential stud this coming season?
You know, so many fans are just hoping and praying that this guy stays healthy. And you would think, I mean, coming out of college, at one point in college, he played, he's 6'7", and he played at 276. I mean, a big, big guy. But unfortunately, he's had injuries. And I got to tell you, it's driving him nuts. He has committed himself. I talked to him multiple times this offseason. This guy's really committed himself to being in the best possible shape that he could come into next year. And of course, injuries, there's luck that's involved in it. But I got to say, as far as he's concerned, you know, I mean, he's training hard right now. I talked to him. I mean, he's even right now at this point in the year, obviously OTAs are a little ways away, but, you know, he's batten down the hatches on his diet. He's tightened that up. He's really, you know, really hoping that this is going to be his year this year, and he's putting in the effort to do that. So he's doing everything on his end. He's just got to try and stay healthy, because that's the only thing that's really been standing in his way, I think.
Fantastic.
Talking with Jenna Lane, who covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who's also at Gators Pro Day, covers them for Sports Talk 1040. Jenna, before we let you go, speaking of tight ends, Florida has a tight end who I know has battled some injuries during the course of his career, Jake McGee. There hasn't been a lot of chatter about him, but 2 years ago he put up some respectable numbers. You know, in addition to a player like McGee, before we let you go, anybody else out of this Florida class that maybe falls under the radar that you think people should take notice of?
Well, there's that other cornerback as well that played opposite of it. And, of course, his name escapes me suddenly. But, you know, he played opposite Vernon Hargraves, and he got a lot of buzz yesterday. And I thought that that was, you know, telling, because especially when you got a guy like Hargraves who commands as much attention that he did, you're obviously going to look, you know, if guys aren't going to be throwing his way, well, then, you know, you got to kind of look at the other side just a little bit. And, of course, his name escapes me. I really wish it had.
Is it Brian Poole who you're referring to?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I heard a lot of buzz about him yesterday. Brian Poole, and he was 5'10". You know, the size is going to impact him a little bit, but he looked really good. I think a lot more teams are going to be looking at him, especially because, again, you've got a guy like Hargraves who commands the attention that he does on the other side. You know, and he wasn't a Senior Bowl guy, for instance. He was invited to the Shrine Game practice, you know, or the Shrine Game per se. But, you know, got to pick six in that game. I think he's really doing so. He's opening some eyes here. And again, I apologize for not remembering his name. Trying to keep track of all these guys could be a little bit difficult.
Oh, there's a lot. No worries there.
There are, especially at a school like this, which, I mean, of course, it's telling. Every single team was there. I mean, it was a packed house yesterday. But a number of people I talked to whose opinions I really respect, they had mentioned Poole as someone, you know what, take a closer look at him. He's definitely worth keeping an eye on. So I'm curious to see kind of, again, you watch the tape, you see people throwing towards his direction away from Hargraves. Hopefully that bolsters his stock just a little bit, because he didn't do anything to hurt himself yesterday either.
Well, and I'm sure he's got somewhat of a chip on his shoulder, because you talked about the size of Hargraves. Poole's only 5'9 as well. So, you know, sometimes it's easy to overlook these guys, as you mentioned, who may be on the smaller side, but it's all about whether or not they can handle press coverage and some of the other assignments that they're going to have to delve into once they feed into an NFL team. Well, Jenna, greatly appreciate the insight and the time from covering Florida Gators camp, and good luck covering the Bucs throughout the offseason as well as this coming season.
Yeah, Jenna, you...
Thanks so much.
Jenna, you rock. So it's always a pleasure having you on. You do such a great job. Thank you.
Thank you so much, guys. Really, really appreciate it.
You got it.
Got it. Jenna Lane, who covers the Bucs for Sports Talk 1040 in Tampa, kind enough to give us a layout of the Florida Gators class.
But realistically, you think he'll be there at 10? I mean, I know it's funny saying that, because, look, did the Jets think that Williams would be there for them? No, absolutely not. It was kind of like, somebody pinched me. Is he here? Let's take him. So, you know, every now and then, a lot of people felt Williams was the best player coming out of the draft last year. So, you know, every now and then, you don't know. Certain teams go for best player on the board. Other teams kind of fall in love with a player that maybe they met with, they spoke with, they saw at a pro day. Other teams, you know, go by need. So you never know how, especially those first 10 picks, you never know how that's gonna fall, and who's gonna really fall in your lap. But I mean, there's always a chance that he would be there. I just don't know. I'm looking at a lot of the mock drafts, and a lot of them, you know, have him going actually to the Tampa Bay Bucs, his hometown, at 9, right before the Giants.
Which makes sense, because they could use some help in the backfield with Alteron Verner.
Some of them having going to the Baltimore Ravens. So, if, you know, out of the teams that, you know, that potentially could draft him before the Giants, the Tampa Bay, Philadelphia, and the Ravens.
I think the Cowboys could consider taking a corner there. I know Ramsey may be a better fit because he could play both positions, but I wouldn't cross out Dallas too.
I think
the cornerback spot.
I think Dallas goes like, I don't like to me like Ezekiel Elliott.
Well, they just signed Alfred Morris, so
it depends on whether or not
they want to add another
running
back.
I know, but like Alfred, yeah, like, yeah.
They got Morris and McFadden.
I mean, they got
two guys.
Yeah.
Neither
of those guys do anything for me. You know what I mean? I mean, when you talk to executives in and around the NFL and they say, you've got to pay attention in regard to why did Washington let Alfred Morris go? Wasn't because of money. Now, if it's because of money, then that's a player you want. If it's because of skill or just maybe they feel the player doesn't have it anymore, like that's the one thing you have to look at. Why did a team let a player go?
I think part of it is the emergence of Matt Jones and what they see out of him. So, you know, from a cap space perspective.
But Matt Jones wasn't able to stay healthy last year. When you have a player that cannot legitimately stay healthy, especially what was his first year in the NFL, right?
Matt Jones, yeah, he's working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. I'm just – those two running backs just don't – I look at Dallas and I think Ezekiel Elliott. You bring in Ezekiel Elliott, they have that phenomenal offensive line. Tony Romo is able to stay healthy. And you have Dez Bryant? Wow.
Well, you could also make the argument if you have a good offensive line, the talent in the backfield shouldn't really make much of a difference. Because if you look at McFadden's numbers this season, it was pretty respectable considering his track record and his history. And part of it was the play of the offensive line.
Do you want respectable or do you want sensational?
Needs, too.
I'd want sensational.
I mean, it's the same thing if you look at it from the Giants' perspective. You know, the Giants, you can make an argument, have a lot more needs other than running back at this point. If Elliott's there at number 10, you know, what do you do under those circumstances?
I don't think the Giants take him, but...
Elliott has more upside than maybe any running back currently on the roster? Or perhaps most running backs in the NFL right now?
Yeah, but I think the Giants' roster in regard to who they have on the roster at the running back position far exceeds what the Dallas Cowboys have. I think the more interesting point here is I think if Ezekiel Elliott is still on the board at 10, hands down, he is the best player on the board at 10. Now, Giants pride themselves on taking the best player on the board. Now, does that mean they think he's the best player on the board? There will be a ton of people who feel that he is the best player on the board. Does that mean that the Giants' phone will start ringing? I think so.
No, it depends. I mean, it depends on if they value, though, somebody else higher than Elliott, then they're probably going to take the player who's top-notch on their board. Keep that in mind. Regardless of whether or not somebody's interested in moving up to grab Elliott, if they feel they are now in position to grab the player they have on the top of their board, you have to weigh that. As opposed to moving down, then you take the risk that that player's not going to be there anymore. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. All right, let's open up the phone lines here. We also want to remind you that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. All right, Dean is in Connecticut. He gets us going on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Dean, how's everything?
I'm great, Lance Anita. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Doing well. So what do you have for us?
Well, I think that lady that just spoke from Tampa did an amazing job. And I just wanted to start off by touching on Hargraves, if you don't mind. After picking up Jenkins and you already have DRC on the other side, I would feel that drafting somebody at 10 basically to play the nickel until he can move over to the outside is kind of like a leap, in my opinion. I mean, you just paid Jenkins and DRC is getting paid. He went to the Pro Bowl and had two picks in the Pro Bowl. So do you really think Hargraves can step up and outperform one of those two players?
Let me throw it to you this way. A lot of times you're drafting a top-tier player who's going to come in and might play one role this year, but very well could be your starting corner next year. I mean, how long do you think you're going to have DRC? And DRC every single year has not been able to stay healthy. You can anticipate that maybe there's one, two, possibly three games that you're not going to have DRC to play in. Possibly. You know, I mean, he is getting older, and he hasn't been being able to stay healthy in the past. You can't just look and say, all right, well, wait a minute. You know, we just brought in Jenkins. We have DRC. Why are we going to draft a corner? Well, if the comparisons are Joe Hayden, and you have the potential of having a Joe Hayden here for the next 4 to 6
Agreed.
Years, you know, I don't and he's available at 10. I don't know how you pass that up.
Well, this is the only way I can, like, understand that is right now. I mean, I'm a diehard Giants fan. We all are. But safety's a mess. I mean, let's be honest. We don't know who's going to start opposite Landon Collins. I mean, we need some great protective corners if we're going to go into the season with Landon Collins and Matt Burhe and Bennett Jackson as our answers. So I'm thinking there's going to be either they're going to trade down, because I truly believe the Eagles, one of the NFC, that Dallas or Philly is going to take Elliott. I think that's why Philly moved up to try to get Elliott. So, I mean, we're stuck between taking a tackle and maybe a wide receiver, because we never know what Cruz is going to come back either. So, I mean, we have a lot of holes to fill. I just want to get your perspective on the Hargraves and the perhaps Laquon Treadwell.
Well, I really quick, I you know, it's interesting. I think a lot of Giants fans are kind of in the same boat you are, and are very concerned and have some deep concerning issues in regard to the safety position. But this organization does not, from Jerry Reese down to the coaches. You know, and again, we don't have really a sample size in regard to what Nat Burhe, what Bennett Jackson, what Mikal Thompson can do. So I totally get it, and I totally understand why there's this feeling like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? Who's going to play opposite Landon Collins? But there is some big time belief and confidence in the guys that are on this roster right now. I don't believe that the Giants are entering this draft saying, wow, that other safety spot is a really big sore thumb for us. Now, do they address it in the draft? Possibly, maybe. You know, that's not, you know, is it the second, third, fourth round? Maybe. I don't think it's the first round, but this team and who runs this team do not have the same beliefs you do, and I think a lot of Giants fans have in regard to that safety position. Just FYI.
Well, I appreciate that, but I'm sure most Giants fans would like to be in Jerry Reese's position, think they could do a better job. But, I mean, if you look at the body of work, he did win us two Super Bowls. I remember what we have, Jabril Wilson and James Butler as our safeties in 2007, if I'm correct.
Well, and Dave Merritt, not to cut you off, Dean, actually spoke about that season at the beginning of this year when there were so many young guys in the mix, and his claim was, we've done this before, where we've given young guys an opportunity to groom, go out, win the job. Now, unfortunately, a lot of them got hurt. That wasn't necessarily anticipated, but I think if you go based on track record and organizational philosophy, there are examples of either unknown veterans who have been brought in who have claimed the job, or young guys who have been given an opportunity to claim the job, as opposed to going out there and making a humongous splash.
Well, let's just hope somebody steps up and plays big. I know you got a lot of callers. I'll take it off the air. Thank you so much.
All right, Dean. Thanks for the phone call. Appreciate that. I think based on what John Marison and what Jerry Reese have indicated to the media in the last few days, they seem to be pretty high on the young class. And, you know, it goes back to, if they do ultimately bring in another young safety, I mean, I would argue you have a nucleus of young guys right now who add up to, you know, not much experience. There are 16 starts among the entire safety group right now on the roster. Landon Collins is responsible for all 16 of those starts, and that group has combined for just 48 games. Three of those safeties have combined for 48 of those games. So you have a lot of guys that haven't even stepped on the field in a regular season game, which would be the equivalent of bringing in a rookie. I think you have youth here. If anything, maybe you bring in a complimentary veteran down the road to sort of balance out the inexperience. But I think you got enough youth here to test the waters at this point.
There's an article out right now, and it's on CBSSports.com. I read it this morning, and it's agents' take, and this is from agents, examining the 10 most interesting free agents still available. And here's the list. RG3, which very interesting reports right now. A lot of people feel that he might go to Cleveland. The Jets are interested because they're not able to work out a deal with Ryan Fitzpatrick at the moment. So it's going to be really interesting to see where RG3 goes, and also where he goes. Does he immediately get an opportunity to start, or does he have to compete for a starting job? Ryan Fitzpatrick 2, Arian Foster 3, Anquan Boldin 4. Let me tell you something. I'm a big Anquan Boldin fan. I know he's long in the tooth, whatever the case may be, but you want to talk about a veteran leader. And this is something that you and I have talked about a lot on the show, and that is when you walk into the Giants locker room, yes, you've got Eli Manning. He leads by example on the football field. He's not your rah, rah, rah guy in the locker room. If Victor Cruz is healthy, he comes back. He's in that locker room often. I think he can be a voice. I think he could step up. Other than that, I mean, I'm looking around and, you know, there's no more John Beeson. Obviously, Antro Roll hasn't been here for a year. you know, hopefully as Odell Beckham Jr. matures a little bit more, eventually, maybe the next 2 or 3 years, he can be that guy. But he's not that guy right now. And when you look at the DB position, Landon Collins, same thing. Maybe 2 or 3 years from now, he can be that guy. He's not ready. And with Prince Amukamara leaving, I was talking to a few of the media guys the other day and saying, when we go in and we need to talk to the DBs, who do we go to now? It's going to be tough. Jenkins isn't known as a media savvy guy. So, you know, looking around that locker room, I think if you go out, if the Giants could bring in Anquan Boldin on the cheap, on the low, the value that I think that you'd get for him being in the locker room would be absolutely tremendous. Just throwing that out there. Reuben Randall's still out there. Greg Hardy, but the Cowboys apparently down in Boca said that they're still kind of playing around with the idea of maybe bringing him back onto that roster. How about this? Inside linebacker Carlos Dansby. He's 34. 34. He's been around a little bit. But here's the guy that I wanted to bring up. And last but not least, safety Reggie Nelson. Turns 33 in September. Okay. He's been in the league 9 years. Obviously, age is a factor. But this is a guy, again, another you mentioned, a veteran guy that could come in and kind of take under his wing a lot of these young upcoming safeties, again, that the Giants have a lot of belief in. I think Reggie Nelson is a guy that Giants fans should keep an eye on. And, again, I'm a big Anquan Boldin fan. I think he would be great in this locker room and great for Odell Beckham Jr. And some of these other wide receivers.
Well, and also be a good fit for the scheme, too. And despite his age, he's still producing at a very high rate. I have not seen a drop-off in terms of his production, at least when he's at a quarterback. Remember, he went through a few years in Arizona where he didn't have really great quarterback play here. I don't think that's necessarily going to be a question. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We've got Len in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing well, Len.
Good morning, Len.
Listen, real quick, if I could piggyback on what the previous caller said about your guest.
Yeah.
There's nothing like a person who does their homework and prepares. And there were just little instances in that conversation that you guys were having with her that you really got the feeling that this was a person who had done their homework and had prepared for this, 10-minute conversation that she had. So, and I always appreciate that. I always appreciate that.
Thank you, Lynn. I'm sure she appreciates your comments. So thank
you. Yeah. There were just the little nuances, just, you know, 3 or 4 words where you said to yourself, this is a person who knew they were talking to, and they did a little homework to get ready for it. And that's always refreshing. Kudos to ownership real quick for sticking with value pricing on the preseason games as part of the season ticket package for 2016. That's very much appreciated that they continue to do that. Nice move on their part. I'm trying to figure out this IR thing, Lance. Why not just have everybody who's on IR eligible to return when they're off IR?
Well, they're still only allowing one player to come back late in the season.
Yeah, yeah. Well, why
IR?
Not? Why not anybody?
So you're saying basically, if you have 10 guys on IR, you could bring back all 10.
Bring back all 10.
I think from a competitive balance standpoint, they probably don't want to do that. It's something worth having a conversation about. I would agree with you, Len. But all this does, in my mind, which I like, is September. You don't have to put yourself with your back against the wall and determine who is likeliest to return. You can let it breathe for a little bit. So if somebody
right.
who's injured looks like their rehab is going well, but you're not 100% certain, you can wait 6 weeks into the season to label that player as designated to return. I like that because I think at least in the Giants case, there were a few guys that could have returned this season, but because of the rule, they were not allowed to.
Yeah. Okay. The other thing, and I'm not, I don't know, it may not be worth talking about here, but I think the old rule, I think we can now refer to it as the old rule with the IR designated person. I think that person could be designated at any time. I mean, it could have been week 6, could have been week 10. I mean, it didn't have to be before the season started. You could designate somebody who got hurt in week 4, for example, and might be back by week 12 as that one person. But okay, I think that's the way it was, Lance.
Well, 00, for example, he was designated to return last season. So that basically spells out what you're talking about. But what had happened for a lot of teams is they actually gave out the designation when the 53-man roster was finalized.
Yeah, right.
And then they probably wish, well, who knows, somebody could get hurt, like you said, in week 7,
absolutely.
And then we should have held on to the designation to return.
You know, I always thought under that rule that was really for a person. I hate to even mention the name, but you know, Eli gets hurt in week two, but we can get him back by week 10. You know, 8 weeks later, we're going to get him back.
Yeah.
That you almost had to save that was one for, you know, that was one for a special player, a Beckham, a Manning or something like that. And luckily, those guys never get hurt, right?
Well, and you hope that trend continues. But you're right. You want the flexibility that your most valuable player is the one that gets the designation to return. And that player may go down, like you said, 6 or 7 weeks into the season, and you don't want to then be stuck in a position, well, we already labeled somebody designated to return. So the more flexibility the rules allow, to me, the better it is for every team in the league.
One other thing, and this is a positive. I'm giving up on mock drafts until the week of the draft. I mean, this thing is changing. It's changing hourly. As the pro days come along, the top 10 changes. And, you know, the safety from Florida, who's going to be a darn good player that she talked about, I think his name is Neil.
Yeah.
I mean, I had him in the third. Maybe not as – he might last till the early fourth. But now we're talking about this guy at the top of the first round, and I'm not saying he shouldn't be. I'm just saying that's how dramatically this draft is being analyzed. I'm just going to sit back and wait till the draft, and wait till 48 hours before the draft, and then I'm going to pick my person who I think the Giants should draft and who I think will be left, because it's changing. I mean, it's amazing. It's people are going crazy with this on. You know, mock draft 3.0, 4.0, et cetera. I think we ought to just settle down and wait. Hey, one other point. What does this kicking rule mean in the end? I mean, what are we trying? I mean, what's the league trying to accomplish here? I'm not
– Safety. That's the
you
key.
Think so?
Yeah,
you think so?
It's 100% the key. The key is the fact that they've done studies, and a lot of the owners and members of the competition committee spoke, and they said, Len, that they feel concussions and a number of other injuries have increased over the last few years, specifically off the kickoff return. So their goal is to give teams favorable field position and perhaps cut down on the amount of returns.
You know, this. I can appreciate that for sure. I mean, that of all the plays, that's the one that's most like a train wreck. Every time you see it, but geez, if people are prone to just kind of kneel down, it takes away an awfully exciting playing football. You know, the 105-yard return, the 103-yard return. I mean, those things are. I mean, that's great. I understand where they're going. Maybe there'll be more pooch kicking too, and we really don't get the safety angle.
Well, I think you bring up a good point. I think there will be that style of kicking, the squib kick or something like that, where you know, maybe teams are going to say to themselves, should we return, should we not return, should we take a knee? But here's the thing. On the flip side, you could argue those specialty types of kicks, Len, may actually be more of an injury risk. So it may be counterproductive from that standpoint.
I can see that. I can see that. Well, one last thing. We've gone too long without Giant football. Come on, let's get to August and September. Let's roll through this and get some games going.
Well,
hey, thanks for taking my call.
You got it, Len. Appreciate the phone call. The calendar can only move so fast, Len, so I don't know how we can help you out in that regard. But I think a lot of us are all itching for football to come back. The offseason tends to be lengthy. The good news is at least there's activities every month that keep you sharp and on top of things with respect to the NFL. For example, the draft's going to be here before you know it. We just had the combine, free agency. So there's at least some items to at least talk about throughout the last few months. All right.
We've got a ton of calls today. This is good
Absolutely.
Stuff.
Yeah, let's continue to head back to the phone lines. Here we got AJ in North Carolina. AJ, what's happening?
Thanks for taking my call.
Doing well, AJ. Yeah. What do you got?
Do you think the Giants are going to sign Josh Brown?
Say that again. I didn't hear the name you threw out there.
Josh Brown.
Kicker. Okay. The Giants kicker. Yeah, it's interesting. Things have been relatively quiet on that front for kickers in general who are free agents. I think based on what the Giants have seen, AJ, over the last 2 years, I mean, he's been one of the most consistent kickers in the National Football League. It wasn't until, you know, that late season miss against the Jets where he had somewhat of a setback. But prior to that, Josh Brown was money, whether it be on kickoffs, whether it be in terms of nailing field goals. So the Giants know his true value. I wouldn't be alarmed that nothing has been finalized at this point. You know, he could be perhaps one of the last positions that is going to be solidified. But, I mean, I haven't heard anything specifically. The fact that he hasn't left to go anywhere else certainly keeps the Giants in a very good position at this point.
I haven't heard anything about him. Just want to know. And one more point. Bucks supporter. I like Vernon Hargreaves, but I don't think he's going to be there.
Well, there's a lot of speculation he may go earlier than number 10. I mean, we just spoke to Jenna Lane. The Bucks could be interested in number 9, and you see there's a few other teams I think that could certainly grab a corner, and he right now is rated as the top corner in the upcoming draft. So the chances of him being a number 10 right now seem to be slim, but you never know. I mean, the conversation tends to change. And the other thing is, and AJ, appreciate the phone call. We don't know. You got it. We don't know where the quarterbacks are going to fall. I think if a few quarterbacks go or more than people anticipate, that's going to help all teams like the Bucks, like the Eagles, like the Giants and so forth, who, you know, may not necessarily be targeting a quarterback in the early part of the draft.
Did you hear some scout was saying that Goff is the next Jay Cutler? I don't take that as a compliment if I'm Goff. Do you?
I did not even hear that.
Yeah.
That he compared it to Jay Cutler.
Yeah.
I don't know if he could lose much sleep over that. But.
So like in regard to the teams in looking at the teams that do need a quarterback, okay. So obviously I think a lot of people are anticipating the Cleveland Browns to take a quarterback at 2. Now, you know, again, there's speculation they could possibly trade for Colin Kaepernick, or maybe they come out, they work out a deal with RG3, whatever the case may be. I still think they take a quarterback at 2. Now, a lot of people have them taking Carson Wentz. I actually have them taking Goff. So, you know, regardless, do you agree with me?
There's a possibility that the Browns will take a quarterback. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the teams that you could throw into the conversation.
Dallas
is a possibility if they want to go the route of a backup for Tony Romo.
But in the first round, like, for example, I think, like, a Connor Cook could be available to the Dallas Cowboys in the second round.
Well, I think that's possible. Listen, I'm just saying Dallas, it's a possibility they're having conversations about a backup quarterback. I wouldn't take a backup quarterback there, but I think it's one of the teams that, based on your discussion here, you at least need to consider they could be in the mix for a quarterback.
And also,
based on that.
Down in Boca, Jerry Jones came out and said that he would still consider bringing Johnny Manziel onto their roster. But he says he needs to sit down with him and speak to him and make sure that he's on the path to being something other than he was in Cleveland. San Francisco does end up trading Colin Kaepernick, will they draft a quarterback at 7? That's a good possibility. I hear Blaine Gabbert. A lot of people don't think that Blaine Gabbert could work well in Chip Kelly's system, but everybody I speak to is telling me, like, coaches and scouts and are telling me, don't sleep on Blaine Gabbert. He's very deceiving. He's a lot more athletic than what most people think. And in fact, a lot of people are saying that the reason Colin Kaepernick wants out of San Francisco is because he doesn't want to compete for the starting job with Blaine Gabbert. Very interesting. So San Francisco might be a team.
I think those are the three that would consider a quarterback of
right.
the top 10.
Or, and keep in mind, there are teams down here that very well might want to trade up for somebody. The Chicago Bears being one. I mean, how long is Jay Cutler going to be a Bear? You know, that's a big question mark there. The Rams being another at 15. That's a team that very well could want to trade up.
I just wonder, depending on how the draft goes, I mean, that to me would be one of those play-it-by-ear scenarios, because I think this is a draft where if you want a quarterback and the quarterbacks are not going very quickly in the top 10, there's a good chance a quarterback will fall to you as opposed to being ultra-aggressive and moving up. Plus, I think a lot of teams are looking at that RG3 trade, and they're wondering whether or not, big picture, it's really worth giving up assets.
Not a trade. But you're talking about the Colin Kaepernick trade?
No, I'm talking about the Rams and the Redskins with the whole RG3 swap.
Oh, okay.
About how, you know, in hindsight, sometimes those things don't necessarily always work out. So I think teams are always looking at previous trades to determine, do I want to take that type of a risk?
Yeah, but Dan Snyder gave up the world for RG3. I mean,
team's going to ask for a lot, though, if you want to move up? I mean, any good businessman is going to ask for a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure a team's going to ask for a lot, but, like, that was beyond a lot. That was just ridiculous. And one more team I want to throw into the mix, and that's the Jets. Listen, I don't think the Jets are sold that Bryce Petty is their future. So, you know, that's another team. And if they don't work out a deal with Ryan Fitzpatrick, that could be another team that might be interested in moving up. I don't know, just throwing out some options out there. It's interesting, and it's going to be fun. It is going to be really fun to see how this all pans out.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Tim in New Jersey. Tim, what's happening?
Nothing. How are you? Nothing. I got a question for you.
Yeah.
They think the Giants can get the signed tackle Jake Long and tight end Vernon Davis.
Well, Vernon Davis and Jake Long, I mean, two players that are certainly still out on the market. Long was looked at last season And you could make the argument another veteran right tackle to come in to compete with Marshall Newhouse is not necessarily a bad idea. I haven't heard any speculations or any stories and so forth. As far as Vernon Davis is concerned, you know, Vernon Davis is a good blocker, and I think he would provide some veteran presence here. But, you know, there's some questions about his durability based on what's transpired over the last few seasons and his efficiency. So, you know, I don't know if teams are as high on Vernon Davis, Tim, and appreciate the phone call, as he was looked upon maybe, let's say, 2 or 3 years ago, especially with what happened, you know, in Denver when they made the trade and so forth. He had a case of the dropsies here or there in some critical moments. And I'll go back to, you know, what we were talking about earlier with the safety position. I think the Giants look at this young nucleus of tight ends the same way that they look at the young nucleus of safeties, where they feel, you know, there's a group of players here that they can find a quality tight end or a mix and match of players that will be able to solidify the position, as opposed to maybe bringing in somebody that would then serve as an obstacle for a young guy to get more playing time, based on what we've seen out of Will Tye and Larry Donnell over the last few years. So that's at least something else to keep in mind here. Charlie is in Maine as we move along here till the top of the hour. Charlie, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Anita. How are you?
Hi.
Doing well, Charlie.
Hey, I just wanted to chime in on the safety situation. I think it's so important that we get a veteran safety with talent, because you got to remember, Spags' system needs a veteran safety back there, like a quarterback, calling his plays, knowing where to put people, knowing what to do. And we saw what happened last year when we didn't have a veteran safety with talent. We had a couple, but they didn't have enough talent. So to go into this season with guys who like Burhey and Thompson and Cooper and guys, I mean, together they probably played one game between the three of them, would be a disaster. To me, we'd be going for a 3-peat, 6-10 again. We need a veteran safety. That Spags has always had that guy in his system. He even brought Butler over to the Rams to have that guy. I mean, he must be shaking his head going, what do I need to do to get a talented safety on my team? So I hope, for God's sakes, that they're not so myopic to think that they don't need a veteran safety with talent. Now, Nelson would be the perfect guy to bring in. He's still available. You know, give him a 2-year contract. These other safeties, Burhey and them, can learn from this guy. It will solidify the back end, and Spags would have his quarterback back there. So I don't understand how they cannot even think that they don't need a veteran safety presence.
Well, they haven't necessarily said anything on the record with respect to that. It's just that they've been very high, Charlie, on the young group of players. That doesn't mean that bringing in a veteran is completely out of the rationale or the thought process that they're having right now. It's just, I think right now all signs seem to indicate they're optimistic that somebody will emerge out of this group with everybody returning to full health. Here's the positive to this, and I agree with you, Charlie. I think there's value in bringing in veteran safety. I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. I'm just looking at it from the flip side here. I think, number one, while a lot of those guys were hurt last season, they did work. They were here for the meetings. So they had 1 year to digest Spags' system. At least that's a positive there. And Landon Collins also had a full year on the field in Spags' system. So it's a little bit different experience-wise entering this year's training camp as opposed to last year's training camp. Whether or not you want to say that the reps on the field are not there, I would agree with you, but the mental reps are much more there than the physical reps.
Yeah, hopefully, yes. But we need to bring in, you know, some guys over 30, some vets that will supplement this team and solidify it. You know, just like Denver Broncos did, they brought in Evans, they brought in Daniels, Owen Daniels, a tight end. He was 33, but caught some important balls in that Super Bowl game. They also, of course, had Peyton, who was like 39, and they had a couple other guys over their 30s. One was on the defensive line that played a really good game in rotation. You need those guys. We need a Antoine Bolden, you know, like Anita was talking about. You need that type of guy to solidify, to be a veteran in that wide receiver position. You know, you need 2 or 3 of those guys to make a championship team, and I think you need one of those guys in the safety position, you need it in wide receiver, and you definitely need it at right tackle or left tackle. in my scenario is to go and try to trade for Joe Thomas. And
the Browns pretty much ruled that out, by the way, Charlie. Yeah, I hate to be a Debbie Downer.
I don't think they'll rule it out if you give them an offer they can't refuse. This is my offer.
Well, let's hear this.
I would give them a number one pick next year, and I would give them a fourth or a fifth round pick this year and swap number twos with the Browns. Now, the reason I say that, and the Browns are rebuilding. They're going to take years to rebuild. So getting a number one next year would not be that much of a detriment to them. And I think they want to get rid of him anyway. They gotten rid of every other veteran lineman on their team.
Well, but those players were free agents, Charlie. They had the right to leave. There's a difference between getting rid of guys and those guys having the right to leave.
Yeah, but they didn't want to re-sign them. That's my point.
Well, but
they
Joe Thomas is under contract right now. So, I mean, it's a little bit different in terms of his wiggle room.
You're right.
That's
why there's a trade. And that's what I'm saying. I think they would take a number one. And what I'm saying is if we switch twos, then we could maybe get Jalen Smith at the bottom end of the first round, beginning of the second. So he's really a number one pick because he would have been a number one pick or a number two pick this year. And so we wouldn't really lose that 2017 pick, a number one pick, because we'd be getting Jalen Smith, as long as, you know, the medical's all.
Oh, look at that caveat. I love how you attach the caveat. So they get the pick back, but they're bringing in a player that's got a lot of question marks regarding his health.
But I would take the chance on him. I would take he's young. I would take the chance on him, and we wouldn't be losing a number one pick. That's what I would do. I would be bold. I'd go get Joe Thomas. That would totally solidify the offensive line. We'd protect Eli. We'd be able to run the ball left and right. Flowers would be your right tackle, which he should be anyway because he's a mauler. That's his position, right tackle, not left. He's not finesse. That's where he should be. And then we would have an offensive line that would let Eli eat his lunch and throw the ball.
All right, Charlie.
No, that's what I do.
Appreciate the phone call.
So just
and the wishful thinking. Thank you.
I mean, I love it. I will say this. Like, I love Charlie's passion. All right, and he's very creative. But a few things. You hit the nail on the head. Hugh Jackson spoke down in Boca and said that it would be a disservice to whoever their quarterback is if they were to let Joe Thomas go. So I'm with you. There are a number of players. Actually, the Cleveland Browns let two, Alex Mack and Jeff Schwartz's brother.
Joe Schwartz. Yeah.
Yeah, so they already let two offensive linemen go. I don't believe they let Joe Thomas go. So that's first and foremost, regardless of what the offer is. Number two, I don't believe the Giants would offer a first-round draft pick for Joe Thomas. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. And number three, the Giants are set on Eric Flowers being the left tackle. Jerry Reese spoke about that in Indianapolis. They like him at the left tackle. I don't see Eric Flowers moving. Although, Charlie, there are a number of people who do agree with you who feel that he would be better at right tackle. Jerry Reese and this organization do not. So chances are he's going to stay at left tackle.
All right, we got two callers left. I want to try to get to both here before we wrap up. Let's start with Brandon in New Jersey. Brandon, what's happening?
Yes. Yeah, what's going on, man? I totally disagree with Charlie. I really do.
You wouldn't be the only one, Brandon.
I like the direction that we're going in. We're going with young. We're going with talent, and that's believed us to where I want to put the GM hat on and finish figuring out the rest of this team. Because I feel as though we're right there, and I think we just could fill out the roster with this draft. Now, me personally, I believe a third corner is more important than the free safety position because we got guys coming back. And like you said, they've been in a year in the system. So what I would do with the number one pick, if Hargroves is there, and he at corner, I would take him and plug him right into the third slot corner. In the second round, I'll go grab our right tackle position. We do not need a veteran right tackle. We need another young right lineman to go along with what we got. Like I said, leave Eric Flowers at the left tackle position. You got Pugh at left guard, Rich Bird at the center. Put Bobby Hart at the right guard position. And if Coughlin is there in the second round, I'll take him. Even if he's there in the first round, I'll take him and so solidify the right position, the right tackle position, and go for the corner in the second round. Third round, I believe we need to draft another middle linebacker. I don't know too much about the Robinson kid from the Redskins, but I believe I will put him in competition with the guy Ragland from Alabama. I draft him in the third round. Fourth round, I'll go grab our wide receiver, another wide receiver that we need. Fifth round, I'll go get a draft, another defensive lineman to put depth behind Ola and Olivia and JPP. I'll draft another pass rusher that can stop the run and get to the quarterback. Sixth round, I'll probably go get a blocking tight end. That's what I'll do in the sixth round, get a blocking tight end. And the seventh round,
well,
I'll
there is no seventh round pick right now, Brandon. You can't use a seventh round pick because the Giants don't have a seventh round pick. So
we got
to cut you off at the sixth round.
In the sixth round, I'll take the either another defensive tackle or I just go with a blocking tight end and fill out the rest of this roster. I believe the third corner and the right tackle position need to be addressed in the draft. That's how I will go. Build out the rest of the line with the draft. And even if just Jason Springs is there in the second round, I'd take him as well.
All right, Brandon, we're going to have plenty of time to give all our mock drafts. I mean, you're really ahead of the game. And certainly appreciate the pass and appreciate the phone call. And they're going to target depth in the draft. There's
also
no doubt about that.
It's impossible to talk about the draft in that regard because you don't know how players are going to fall. You can't sit there and say, okay, I'm going to take this position player in this round and I'm going to take that position player in that round because, for example, last year, I think the Giants were not expecting Landon Collins to be available in the second round, and they wheeled and dealed overnight to move up to get him at the top of the second round. I mean, so, you know, you can't. It's not a way that you can go into a draft. Yeah, you go into a draft and, you know, you highlight certain players that you think would be a great fit for the Giants, that, you know, anticipating where they might still be available in what round. But, you know, you just never know how guys are going to fall or how guys are going to rise. You just don't know.
Let's get to Bob in North Carolina. Bob, what's happening?
Nothing.
How we doing? What do you got?
Good. Not much. How you guys doing?
We're doing well. So what's on your mind?
Well, just wanted to voice my opinion on the pick 10. I think we've done a great job on defense. We've solidified the line. I think we're pretty good at backer, and I like the corners. I think we need to focus on the offense, you know, offensive line, and then take a look at Elliott or Derrick Henry to get us down the field, or, you know, we're in there first and 10, you know, punching into the goal and run the clock down in the fourth quarter. I think Derrick Henry would be an awesome pick.
Well, the running back from Alabama. Well, I think personally, you got the personnel right now on the roster that could do the things that you just laid out. And I think that if they add some more depth to the offensive line, they've got, once again, some depth in the backfield. You have four running backs on the roster right now. And there's no reason why, with that mixture of versatility, that you can't be productive, assuming, obviously, everything clicks on the offensive line. So, I mean, the necessity to take a running back with the 10th overall pick, to me, shouldn't necessarily be the top priority.
Okay. I got you there. I was just, you know, looking at somebody real strong back there. I thought Henry would fit the build. You know, reminds me of the Brandon Jacobs thing and
Well, I don't think Henry's going to go that high. I'd be very surprised. I mean, Elliott, who you threw out there, I could see certainly him going in the top 10. Henry, I don't know necessarily. And keep in mind, you know, Bob, the other thing is outside of last year when two running backs went in the first round, it's been quite some time since running backs, period, have gone in the first round. It was Todd Gurley and Melvin Gordon last year who went in round one. But if you look at the years surrounding that, you know, teams were not taking chances on running backs in the first round. I think that's been pretty much the trend. I think last year was extremely unique. So that's the other thing to take into consideration.
Okay, well, that's what I was just putting out there.
All right, Bob. Well, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in.
Really quick, this just came down, that Hard Knocks, it's going to be the Los Angeles Rams this year. So that should be fun. Todd Gurley, Hollywood, out in Los Angeles. I love Fisher. I think he's one of the best coaches in the NFL. Just a really, really cool guy. I mean, quarterback competition that's going to be going on with Nick Foles, Case Keenum, and those guys should be a fun one to watch, right?
I think they're all fun to watch. I mean, HBO does a great job, regardless of whether or not there's personalities on the team. People are skeptical about the Texans.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, the Texans.
Everything turned out fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it was still extremely entertaining.
It was okay. Yeah. I thought Cincinnati was better than the Texans.
Well, yeah, J.J. Watt. I thought Charles James, who was with the Giants, was quite entertaining. Yeah, I always like to see the behind-the-scenes type of view, regardless of what team it is. Plus, this will be interesting because you can see a team transitioning from one location to another, more so than the actual competition. Yeah. I think that'll be interesting, how players move.
Last year, I got a lot of playoff of Bang Bang Chicken and Shrimp. So, yeah, maybe something like that will happen in Los Angeles.
We'll see.
I'm quite excited. I think it's a good choice.
All right, well, that'll wrap up Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, which you each and every weekday here on Giants.com. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
All right, here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35-30.
Intercepted!
Touchdown, Giants!